learn more about God and learn more about His will. This morning we will be in 1 Samuel chapter 7, as the reading suggests. We'll be actually reading the few verses before where we began. Some of the backstory regarding what takes place shortly before where we will take up our reading. Certainly we had the period of the judges that took place very shortly before our reading. Obviously, seven chapters in Samuel is all that we are at. And then after that, during the time that Eli was judge, his sons were growing and were not very good for Israel. They were evil. They abused the sacrifices that were brought. The Philistines ended up going to battle with Israel, and at that time the Philistines ended up capturing the Ark of God and ended up killing Eli's two sons. When word came back to Eli, his sons were dead, and then he found out that the Ark had been captured, and upon hearing about the Ark, he fell off of his seat backwards, broke his neck, and Eli, their judge, had died. The Philistines, as a result of having captured the Ark of God, as a result of having the Ark of God in their midst, they were plagued with tumors, and they returned the Ark to Israel. Israel, those that were at Beth Shemesh, as we can read in the last part of chapter 6, in celebration of the Ark having returned, and in celebration of the many gifts that were left in the Ark by the Philistines that were trying to make amends, they also were smote, because they had looked in the Ark as they should not have. And so they sent word to Kirjath-Jearim so that they would come to get the Ark. And this is where we will begin our reading, in the beginning of chapter 7. In 1 Samuel chapter 7, verse 1, the men of Kirjath-Jearim came and fetched up the Ark of the Lord and brought it into the house of Abinadab in the hill and sanctified Eleazar, his son, to keep the Ark of the Lord. And it came to pass, while the Ark abode in Kirjath-Jearim, that the time was long, for it was 20 years, and all the house of Israel lamented after the Lord. And Samuel spake unto all the house of Israel, saying, If ye do return unto the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the strange gods and Ashtaroth from among you, and prepare your hearts unto the Lord, and serve Him only, and He will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines. Up to this point, Israel, since the time that Joshua had died, the entire period of Judges, they were, for the most part, Israel. I think I'm a little bit behind on my slides. The period of the Judges is certainly not known to be good. Several times we see the mention that all of those in that time, there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes, specifically mentioned in Judges 21:25. But as Samuel speaks here, he is telling them that it is no longer a time for every man to be doing that which was right in his own eyes. Those days are now past if they turn and seek the Lord. The phrase that I noticed, or that particularly jumped out at me, was the phrase, prepare your hearts for the Lord. He says several things within here, but among them he mentions that they should prepare their hearts unto the Lord. This phrase is mentioned a few times. Well, I think it was around 8 or 9 times at least that I had found within the scriptures, but I will just mention a few in passing. Won't actually turn there at the time, but you can note those. In 2 Chronicles chapter 12, verse 14, Rehoboam, it was mentioned, had not prepared his heart to the Lord, and as a result, he was evil for such. In fact, the reason given for him being evil was that he did not prepare his heart to the Lord. Jehoshaphat, a good king, he was commended because he did prepare his heart to the Lord. Not all that he did was marked as being good. In that same verse, he was also chastised for helping the ungodly, for loving those that hate God. But he was commended because he did prepare his heart for the Lord. He did do many things that were good. Also commended for removing the groves, some places of idol worship, at least some of them. The people during Jehoshaphat's time were chastised. They were certainly not to their credit that they left high places. They left the places of idol worship in place so that they can continue idol worship. The reason given for them doing this is because they did not prepare their hearts for the Lord. And the last one that I will note this morning is Ezra, who was noted as doing many things that were good. He was mentioned as being a skilled scribe. He was mentioned that he did prepare his heart to seek the law of the Lord and to do it and to teach in Israel the statutes and the judgments. Certainly of those on our list, some that would be considered evil, some that would be considered good, those that were good are the ones that had prepared their hearts for the Lord. Those that were evil were because they did not do just that. Within the scriptures, I really couldn't find from any of the passages or from a combination of any of the passages a good definition of this phrase of prepare your hearts for the Lord. But perhaps instead of finding a good definition that we can explicitly spell out, I decided to look further at the things that surrounded this phrase. Look further at what was being said in 1 Samuel 7:3 to help us understand what all is being told to Israel. The first thing that he tells them, again, they had mentioned that they lamented after the Lord at the end of verse 2. He tells them, if ye return to the Lord with all your hearts. Of course, we will continue from there in a moment. This statement implies at least two things that jumped out at me originally. The first being that up to this point, for at least a period before this point, they had not given their hearts unto the Lord, not their entire hearts. Perhaps they had some concept of who God was. Perhaps they had some right ideas about God, but clearly, especially given the idol worship, the other gods that they worshiped, they had not given their hearts to the Lord. Also implied within this statement, as they are told not to turn to the Lord with all their hearts, but to return to the Lord, it implies that at one time they had given their hearts unto the Lord. Now, it may not be this generation that at one time had given their hearts unto the Lord. He may be referring to their fathers, those that walked with Joshua, that had given their hearts unto the Lord and instructing these to return. It may be that some of these had at one time fully given their hearts unto the Lord. But one way or another, regardless of what they had done in their past, at this time, their heart was not there and they needed to return to such. But I think that there is a third implication that can be found within this statement that is also revealed somewhat at the end of verse 2, as it had mentioned that the house of the Israel lamented after the Lord. Clearly, the house of Israel recognized that they needed something different than what they were experiencing during this time period. They recognized that there was something in their life that was lacking, that they did not have all that they need. People don't lament in times of ease, in times of pleasure, in times when they have all that they perceive that they need. They do so in times that they need something else. Again, they had some very evil times throughout the Judges. Not long before this time, they had been defeated by the Philistines. And we can see shortly after this time that the Philistines will decide to come up after them again. They would face them shortly. Their previous judge and his sons had recently died, which would certainly be something difficult for them to accept. Perhaps they didn't care so much about Eli's sons dying, but Eli, it seems that they respected and got much from him. They could not possibly think that at this time, with all that had been happening over numerous years, that they were in the good graces of God. In verse 8, they were very quick to cry out to God upon hearing that the Philistines would come, because they obviously did not think that they were strong enough to be able to handle such an enemy. Truly, they recognized that they needed something at this point. I don't think that I could particularly understand anyone trying to turn to God or thinking to turn to God if they thought that they had need of nothing. If someone thinks that they have everything that they need, if everything that they need is going as they would hope that it would, they don't seek God. People must perceive a need in the first place. God brings love and He brings comfort. God brings hope and He brings salvation. Do you find yourself lacking love or comfort or hope? Do you find yourself in need of salvation? Then Samuel's answer to them at this time is to turn to the Lord with all your heart. A statement that I believe would still hold very true today. That need that you have of love or comfort or hope or salvation or of anything that God will bring, that need can't be met by a best friend. It can't be met by a boyfriend or a girlfriend or even a husband or a wife or a child, a mother, father, brother, or sister. All of the people that we have in our lives cannot meet all of the needs that we truly have. The needs that we have in life, they aren't met by smoking or drinking or partying. They won't be met through work or sports or education or any of the other things that we use to occupy our time. All of the things that we come up with in life can only bring temporary relief, if they bring any relief at all. Many times it is just perceived relief. Only God can supply our every need. In Philippians chapter 4, verse 19, Paul writes, "But my God shall supply all your need according to His riches in glory." Much of what Paul is speaking of at this time is talking about physical necessities, physical needs, but still applies to the many spiritual needs that every person has, that every person finds that they cannot fill through their own lives. Looking back to the verse in 1 Samuel, the next thing that he tells them after turning their hearts to the Lord is to put away the strange gods and the Ashtaroth from among you. Ashtaroth is just one of the gods that they had sought at this time to fill their needs. They filled their needs with these previous gods, these other gods they sought out, the gods of the land of that they had been given. They went to them to seek whatever it was that they needed in life, whatever it was that they perceived they were not getting. They did not continue to seek God as their fathers had done in the days of Joshua. The generation after Joshua sought out the gods of the land that they had been given. This god Ashtaroth, specifically mentioned perhaps because it is of the most beloved. Back in Judges chapter 2, verse 13, really the beginning of their turn away from God, it mentions that they forsook the Lord and served Baal and Ashtaroth, one of the ones that were mentioned. In fact, both of the ones that are mentioned here, Baal and Ashtaroth, are also mentioned in verse 4 as the children of Israel, in 1 Samuel 7:4, as the children of Israel did put away Balaam and Ashtaroth and served the Lord only. We see here a turning point. They had turned away from God in Judges chapter 2, verse 13, to serve these other gods. And then in 1 Samuel chapter 7, verse 4, to turn back to God, these are the ones that they set aside. These are the ones that they got rid of. It is very likely that these gods that they had would have meant much to them for years and years. Their fathers' fathers had been worshiping after these gods. And these were the ones that they were willing to get rid of. recognizing that we have a need beyond what we can fill ourselves is certainly one of the first steps that anyone must take to follow after the Lord. We're going to turn to Luke chapter 18. After getting rid of the things that we need, after turning to the Lord, the next thing that we must do is get rid of the things that we used to replace Him with. And that's one of the problems that we find from the man that we read about in Luke chapter 18, one of the difficulties that he had. There are many things that he did right. It seems much of his life was devoted towards turning towards the Lord, towards doing what was right, towards doing things the right way. And as a result, he was also seemingly very prosperous, as we can read. In Luke 18, this young man, referred to as a certain ruler, asked Jesus, saying, "Good Master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus said unto him, "Why callest thou me good? None is good save one, and that is God. Thou knowest the commandments: do not commit adultery, do not kill, do not steal, do not bear false witness, honor thy father and thy mother." And he said, "All of these I have kept from my youth." Now when Jesus heard these things, he said unto him, "Yet lackest thou one thing. Sell all that thou hast and distribute unto the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven. And come, follow me." And when he heard this, he was very sorrowful, for he was very rich. This young man recognized that even though he had done many things right in his life, even though he had followed all of these commandments as he told Jesus that he had, that he still had a need. He recognized that he either needed or that he wanted eternal life. He recognized that there was something more than what he had at this time. He had done so much good in life already. He had followed the commandments. He had been very prosperous, but he went away sorrowful at this time. He went away sorrowful because he was not willing to give up this wealth. He was not willing to take what he had and to sell it and to give it to the poor, to distribute as any had need. Perhaps at some point in the future he had a change of heart and did just that, but at this time he was very sorrowful at hearing these words. This wealth was very important to him. Jesus went on to talk about how difficult it is for the rich to enter into heaven. I think in part because it is harder for them to recognize the needs that they have in life. I think in part because it is simply something that becomes too important for them to want to give up. Jesus offered this man treasure in heaven, as referred to in verse 22. God offers everything. He offers eternal life with Him. He offers us a reprieve from the eternal punishment that awaits so many. He offers to take care of our physical necessities as well. Yet there are still many in the world that say, "I would follow God if only I didn't have to give up this, or if only I didn't have to start doing this," or many such statements along those lines. There are a lot of religious groups out there that have the slogan, "Come as you are," which certainly is a slogan we would have to agree with, as there's no other way for anyone to come. But frequently what couples that is the idea of staying as you are. Many people like to try to pitch the argument that people can come to God however it is they want to come to God, and that they can do whatever it is they want to do to worship God, and that all will be pleasing. But this idea isn't something that we ever find within the Scriptures. It's not an idea that's ever come from the mouth of God. Turning to God, as Samuel suggests to them in 1 Samuel 7:3, must be accompanied with getting rid of the sinful things in our lives. And not only the sinful things in our lives, but also the things that we prioritize or would have prioritized over God. Certainly, I think that there are many things that have to change when one turns toward God, such as priorities. This young man was very wealthy. I get behind a lot, it turns out, this morning. This young man was very wealthy, very prosperous, probably worked hard to get his money, probably worked hard to get his wealth and his assets, whatever he has that he would be able to sell. And even though he had put away the evil in his life, he still had something that came between him and God, something that was more important to him and God. Not only is turning to God, does it involve putting away the evil, but it involves putting aside our jobs, not quitting our jobs, but making them less important than God. Sometimes it involves setting aside family, spouses, husbands, wives, children, not getting rid of them, not separating them from our lives, but making sure that they are where they belong in our lives, that they are beneath God, that we recognize that He must come first, that we set our eyes towards Him first. I think both of these things can be found within the words of 1 Samuel and also Luke, as we read here. So far, Samuel had said to turn your hearts to the Lord, to put away strange gods, also mentioned to prepare your hearts unto the Lord, which we'll talk more of in a moment. And the next thing that he says was serve Him only. Serve God only. Certainly a person has choices. They can serve sin, they can serve gods, they can serve their own desires. Certainly a choice that many people make. One that Paul talks about many times. We'll turn to Romans chapter 6. He talks a lot about such ideas in Romans 6 in setting aside the things that we once served and in following God as a result. In verse 12 of Romans chapter 6, he says, "Let not sin therefore reign in your mortal bodies, that ye should obey in its lusts thereof. Neither yield your members as instruments of unrighteousness unto sin, but yield yourselves unto God as those that are alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness unto God. For sin shall not have dominion over you. For ye are not under the law, but under grace." Certainly Paul recognizes that the choices that they had made previously were choices that had them serving after sin, choices that had them following after other gods, whether they had actual idols that they worshipped or not, or whether they simply had things that were more important to them than following God. Talking with Mitzi just earlier this morning, she was mentioning to me about a man that she was speaking to that said that he wanted to earn his first million before coming to find God, before seeking God. He set something else above God, something that was more important to him, something that he thought was going to fill his needs before seeking after these other things. But that is not what we find to be good within the Scriptures. We certainly find many things contrary to those ideas. But the only other option is to set all those things aside and to serve God, to serve Him only. God's will has always been very simple. Have your heart turned towards Him so that you can serve Him and He will be your God and you will be His people. We've seen this idea throughout the Scriptures from beginning to end. Sometimes there are more details within there, but that has always been the path of God. He has shown time and time again that He will ensure that His people are victorious when they need to be victorious, so long as they remain His own. So long as they continue to follow Him and serve Him, He meets their every need, both physical and spiritual. Sometimes the physical needs He meets in plenty, sometimes to their lack. Certainly many in Israel were hungry at times and thirsty at times, didn't have all that they had wanted, but they always had all that they need, and He always provided, so long as they continued to follow, and even many times when they did not continue to follow. Certainly a person has choices, but when considered, they're not much of a choice at all. We must set aside all of these things and choose to serve God. And as a result, 1 Samuel in 7:3, and as shown in the reading this morning, God says, for those that do this, they will be delivered. For these people in Israel, specifically from the hand of the Philistines, for others, we could perhaps generalize it as we will a little bit. There are things that an individual must do to be in a pleasing relationship with God. But nothing that we are asked to do, nothing that they were asked to do in 1 Samuel 7, nor anything that his people have ever been asked to do, compares with the blessings of the promises that he gives them. All that we saw from those of Israel was that they had given rid of their false idols, things that had been made with their own hands. They had served God only, and they were delivered from an army that was much greater than their own, that they would have had no hope of defeating in the first place. In Romans chapter 8, verse 18, Paul talks some about the promises that we are given. He says in Romans 8:18, "For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us." Paul pointing out that there might be difficulties, that there might be things that we don't want to do, things that we would rather not give up, things that are contrary to our own will. We may go hungry at times, we may go thirsty at times, but anything that we go through does not even come close to comparing to the glory which shall be revealed in us. It says something similar in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Verse 17 beginning, he says, "For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal." The treasures in heaven that Jesus mentioned to the young ruler earlier far outweighs anything that this man had, far outweighs anything that he was asked to sell. Yet he still went away sorrowful. The treasures in heaven that await the faithful far outweigh anything that you can think that you can trust in. It outweighs our friends, our family, our jobs, our money, our authority, our status in society. There is nothing that we have that can measure up to the promises that he has given us. Looking back to the idea of preparing your hearts to the Lord. To prepare your hearts to the Lord, to serve the Lord, I believe is to change your heart regarding the things that were once important to you, the things that you once relied in. To change from relying on yourself and on the things that you can do and on the solutions that you can come up with, and to seek God. It means recognizing that the only thing that is truly important in this life and in the next is God. That we seek Him, that we serve Him, that we seek to do His will. If He grants us the blessings of friends and family and provides for our physical needs, then to God be the glory. But the only thing that is important is Him and in serving Him to the end. We must change from relying on ourselves and things created by our hands and put ourselves wholly in His hands, to trust Him completely. The path to follow God is as simple as Samuel laid out. To turn your hearts to the Lord, to put away strange gods, the sin in your lives, to put away the things that come between you and God, to prepare your hearts unto the Lord, to seek Him, to serve Him only. And the promise that He gave them, the promise that He continues to give us, is that He will deliver you. He will deliver us. Back in 1 Samuel chapter 7, turn there for just another moment. In 1 Samuel chapter 7, verse 4, we see that the children of Israel did put away Balaam and Ashtaroth and served the Lord only. They listened to Samuel, they heeded his words. Many times they're told things that they do not heed, but this time they do. In verse 8 that we had read this morning, the children of Israel, after seeing that the Philistines were going to be coming up against them, mentions in verse 7 that they were afraid of the Philistines. They didn't try to find a way to solve the problem. They didn't try to inquire with another nation to come and save them or to build up their fortresses or to prepare for war. Instead, they went to the man of God. They went to Samuel. They said, "Cease not to cry unto the Lord our God for us, that he will save us out of the hand of the Philistines." Certainly worth noting, as we had mentioned Wednesday in Bible class, many times we see people inquire of the men of God, saying, "Pray to the Lord your God for me." We don't see the same thing here. We see them asking that he pray to the Lord our God. They did the things that Samuel had commanded them, that Samuel said, "If you do these things, he will deliver you from the hand of the Philistines." And after they had done these things, they trusted in the words of Samuel. They trusted in the Lord. They trusted in his promises. They sought him out when further problems arose. And in verses 10 and 11, as Samuel was offering up the burnt offering, the Philistines drew near to battle against Israel, but the Lord thundered with a great thunder on that day upon the Philistines and discomfited them, and they were smitten before Israel. And the men of Israel went out of Mizpah and pursued the Philistines and smote them until they came under Bethcar. They put their trust in the Lord in a situation that they themselves could not handle, and he delivered them just as he said he would. Just as we also can know that if we put our trust in him, he will be our God, just as he was theirs on that day. That is the lesson this morning. Certainly many things to consider with regard to how we serve God, with regard to our attitude sometimes about the things of this world and the things that we try to rely on, the ways that we try to solve our own problems instead of relying on God with everything that we need. Certainly man began to sin with Adam and Eve. Men have continued to sin ever since, and God has given us the path to be saved from such sin. For those that are here this morning that have not chosen to be followers of God, that have not chosen to rely on him, then there is something in your life that you're missing. Something in your life that is not being filled by other things, and you need to turn to the Lord. If there are any that have turned to the Lord, any that have been faithful to a point and then have struggled, none of us want to be lost. None of us want to be destroyed in the end. We must all seek God in whatever way we need. If there are any that are subject to the Lord's invitation, then we would ask that you please come forward as we stand and as we sing.